From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing in Dallas, Texas. And joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And joining us, are you up in the land of milk and honey, Milwaukee? Or where are you, Zolly?
I am in the land of 10,000 lakes, which is Minnesota. But you're... I'm in lockdown.
Yeah, okay. Zolly Becker. Favorite show favorite, Zolly Becker, is joining us again because we are here to celebrate a victory for Toxic Fandom, everybody. Toxic fans win, okay? The good guys win.
Yeah, they won this one. Yes. For sure.
Yes. We are talking about the Snyder Cut. Justice League.
It's here.
It's it here. Happened. It happened. It what seemed like a dream years ago dropped on HBO Max in all of its glory. Cinema is saved. Healing, cultural healing has begun. Basically, everything they said would happen, everything Walter said would happen, has come to pass. So
all of it. He was completely right.
Yes.
No. He's completely right.
Yeah.
Completely right.
And Falcon and the Winter Soldier was completely buried.
I didn't even watch it yet. I cannot bring myself to watch Disney Marvel stuff anymore.
Yeah, no one even noticed that it dropped. Like, it's barely been, you know, mentioned at all. No one's talked about it.
I had no idea it was coming out until yesterday. I hadn't even heard of it.
Yeah. It was just like it got buried. It's almost like this is the whole reason they dropped Justice League this weekend, or maybe Disney thought they could catch up, or they dropped a lame show and said, well, you know, it was all the attention on Justice League. Nobody paid attention to our show.
What do you think, Zolly?
Well, the Winter Soldier, we're having a backlash against Marvel now because people have allowed the last year of tribulation to purify them in some ways. And, the Disney Marvel thing is it's becoming increasingly clear to a lot of bugmen and recovering bugmen that this is not about Spider-Man, the Avengers. This is about burning off characters like NFL Super Pro and having them interact in a Disney environment for a 12 to 18 minute thing.
You know,
the dog in the background is crying. I'm sorry. I'm not cruel. I'm so nice to the dog.
we assumed as much. No, I actually had never I hadn't thought of Super Pro in years until just now.
Yeah, I mean, shit like that. Like, it's all that lower tiers, Super Pro, Sleepwalker. Anything that is not a known Marvel entity is ripe for the fiberglass costuming and jokeification.
Well, I noticed after Endgame came out, Marvel put out their big slate of movies, and a lot of it was like C, D, E grade stuff that no one, I can't imagine anybody caring about.
They're just hoping that the name Marvel will propel this Ant-Man plus type thing.
And do you think with Marvel, Iron Man was not a A-list character, but the movie turned him into one, right?
It did. It changed. Iron Man, the movie character, was basically a new character conceptually. He wasn't like Tony Stark at all. Mm-hmm. The comic Tony Stark is like kind of like a shitty technocrat who, like, nobody loves. And Iron Man, the movie, made it like this Gen X neocon revenge fantasy.
Yeah.
That was after RoboCop. And it's
very
so
true.
It's good because it it makes Tony Stark it just makes him like a generic Robert Downey Jr. person, essentially, but he's put through enough trauma that you believe his superhero bullshit. Without the trauma and the waterboarding and the hot pokers and stuff, you really don't have any Marvel heroism. I've said it before that all the Marvel hero shit all comes from like accidents and trauma and horrifying things. And what you have with Disney is this green screen STEM empowerment fantasy.
Yeah, that's a brilliant way of putting it.
That's totally it.
Empowerment fantasy. And
like, it sucks. It's like hollow. It's like, well, ugh.
And so when I remember when Iron Man 2 came out, you know, and it was it was apparent what Disney was doing with Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
But you really started to see, in Iron Man 2, you really started to see the connective tissue between the films. And at first I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. It's like a comic book, you know, they have all these different threads running through it. It's like reading comics. But then after a minute, once that wore off, you kind of started to see how crap it was. Like all the films had the same sort of aesthetic. They all have the same arcs. Like, I remember seeing Doctor Strange and just going, this is Iron Man again.
Yeah. With Doctor Strange, they really nullified all that good pain. Like, you didn't see him get, like, you know, fucked up on you know, opiates because he can't grab a fine grabby shit anymore. You know, there's no suffering. No, it's not, you know, it's not like, there's just nothing there.
Yeah.
It's all like Impossible Burger shit.
But so you said that with Marvel, there's all this stuff with trauma and pain. How would you compare it to like DC?
Well, I'm going to segue to Marvel and DC in a really good bit here. I think the best thing that happened to Disney Marvel once Disney Marvel came into being just after the making of Iron Man 1/2 in the 2009 summer, whenever that was. The best thing was Joss Whedon. Mm-hmm. Because Joss Whedon, as horrible as it sounds, is up there with Alex Ross and all these other, you know, revered, like, comic like worshiper people. These like holy men of the comics. And Kevin Smith is up there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are up there. It doesn't take much. But but anyway, Joss Whedon's first Avengers is the last what I'd call Marvel movie to be a movie.
Yeah.
Like, actually, like, function like a movie. And after that, and people like that mainly because, you know, Iron Man met some other characters who existed. And it was, you know, they liked that. And it was crowd-pleasing, but it was mostly toothless. But it did have... It had just a little tiny bit of baby teeth.
Yeah.
But that was the last thing they did that was not fully Disney paused.
Well, and I remember after Avengers was when I started enjoying the films in the theater less and less.
Oh, yeah.
That was when, and I think the movie where I just said, I don't need to see all these anymore was the second Avengers film, Age of Ultron.
It's a bad movie. It's a bad movie.
And I remember seeing Thor: The Dark World, and that just being joyless to experience. And
That's when I noticed it.
Yeah, and
a lot of these characters don't even like work on their own, like at all.
Mm-mm. No, they don't. And I also noticed that there was a lot more, the dialogue becoming more and more jokey, and the films had less in, like, the first Iron Man film, you have that Robert Downey Jr. sort of smarminess, but like you said, there's this suffering he goes through.
Oh yeah,
and yeah. And it's real, yeah. But the more we go into the Marvel universe, the more the less seriously they want to take themselves, and it's almost like they feel like they can't because they feel like it, I think it opens themselves up to criticism or something. I don't know.
They're
Thor Ragnarok. Good.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to recreate the Joss Whedon experience. And the Joss Whedon experience is Daniel Waters' dialogue with James, James Cameron plotting. And that's really all there is to it.
Oh, man, that's perfect.
And I don't mean, and yes, that's horrible, but like, so what? Joss Whedon is totally, he's Kobe. He's up there with Kobe Bryant now. He's not coming back. You know?
Yeah. Where do you think Joss disappeared? Because do you think it was with Justice League? Was that what killed him? What?
That was his last earthly act as as someone functional in the West Coast industrial complex. Yes. But of all the bad things that Joss Whedon has done and done to women and, you know, put Nicholas Brendan through, all the bad shit that Nicholas Brendan is going through on his Instagram page with his, you know, his conventions and his surgeries and his outbursts.
Who's Nicholas Brendan? I don't know this.
He's Kage Shagama. He's on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah.
Nicholas Brendan plays the author insert character of Joss Whedon.
Oh, is he Xander? Is he Xander?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Xander.
He's Xander. And Xander, if you rewatch Buffy, you see a lot of the dark psychology of Joss Whedon around, you know, predatory, you know, apex predator women. And you see that, like, yeah, this is kind of a bad guy, maybe. But, you know, whatever. It's Hollywood. But Joss Whedon's mistake was early on, he got too chummy, I think, with like that whole Aaron Sorkin wannabe thing.
Well, I've always compared him. I was talking to my wife about it, and I was saying that we were talking about the differences between the two Justice League films. And I said that it's like Joss Whedon's like Aaron Sorkin. All of his characters they sound the same. He can't help himself.
I didn't mean Aaron Sorkin. I meant Aaron Spelling.
Aaron Spelling. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he wanted the Aaron Spelling thing with where all the flesh trim just goes straight to him. But
Beverly Hills
90210
right there.
No, I mean, Aaron Sorkin is like talented and shit and has good dialogue. I mean, it's it's like smarmy and it's like all very, it's dangerous. It's too Yiddish a little. It's a little too Yiddish for normies, I think. But Joss Whedon is not on the level of Aaron Sorkin, I would not say.
No. I was just the way that the way that all the characters have this sort of wit about them. Aaron Sorkin, though, sells it a lot better than Joss does, I think, especially lately. But
I'm sure Aaron Sorkin, like, you know, had like the discipline to not like be mean with women and to women. You can't do that and join in. You are not one of them.
Well,
you're the D&D guy.
Well, yeah, and, you know, for years...
I always described it...
Go ahead.
You know what it is. It's Joss Whedon is his... My problem with his shows and movies is all characters talk like Fletch.
Yeah.
They're all flippant. They all have insults. They all have pop culture references in their insults. It's, I don't know. It's hard to lose myself.
Well, and that's something that, you know, when you watch the Snyder Cut versus the Whedon Cut of Justice League, Batman starts having those kinds of quips in Whedon's version. He has those, which are not there in Batman versus Superman.
I will defend the theatrical cut. I won't defend theatrical.
Oh, well, we're
theatrical cut of Justice League.
We're gonna talk about defensible. It. Yeah, and that's one reason I wanted you on here, because I know you like it.
I'm only defender. I don't mean to divert the progress of the conversation.
Oh, no. Well, we can talk a little bit more about Joss and his downfall, because, you know, you see the meme where it's like Joss Whedon in 2009 and it's King Homer laughing, and Joss Whedon today and he's a pauper.
His downfall, real downfall, was Ray Fisher, I think, comes from a liberal arts university environment, like most of us driven young men, and knows that the way you get ahead is, you know, by using the rules of boomer world against the adults when you get your chance. And I'm grateful for, you know, what I call positive extortion and things like that. Batman does it. If Batman does it, it's okay. You know, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, I'm very standing with Ray Fisher, like aggressively, especially the last 3 days. But yeah, he pissed Ray Fisher off somehow. On a personal level, probably with, like, you know, his shitty, like, you know, fake, like, oh, you know, I really respect women or whatever. You know, and, like, you know, there's a lot, that shit's funny on Twitter and in interviews, but I'm sure, like, 37-hour days in the green screen, and, you know, you are not Joss Whedon making the, like, laughing about all things you're doing and kind of, you know, that's, he was asking for it. I guess.
Well, Joss, you know, he's one of those guys I would, when I was in high school and college, and girls would go, oh, I love Joss Whedon. And, you know, his stuff has this feminist quality to it.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the original guy where I went, I don't trust him. You know?
No, I don't think that, like, yeah, he does the stare, the comic book man stare.
Mm hmm.
That makes the gynecological specimens, like, uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, he married an alt girl and, you know, was able to humiliate her with enough affairs. So, like, you know, it's whatever. He's able to be a good provider.
Didn't his wife or ex-wife or whatever come out and attack him?
Yeah, he mentioned, you know, he had, like, a lot of affairs and, like, you mean and whatever. But, I mean, that's normal Hollywood, yeah. Whatever. But, I mean, you know, he was just informally like a cult leader of neo male feminism, and neo male feminism, you know, if it walks like a duck, it is a duck, and that's how it
went. So Joss, you said Justice League is his last act on Earth.
His last act on Earth.
But, like, yes. He's never been officially canceled.
No.
He was kind of soft canceled before Me Too happened. But where did he... What happened? Where did he go?
Well, when Sarah Michelle Gellar released her thing on the internet, we're saying that Joss Whedon is bad and no longer to be discussed. That means that Joss Whedon and his deeds can never be fully discussed. Because, you know, it could involve, you know, there were rumors, you know, 25 years ago back when they made Buffy season one, that, like, Julie Benz was, like, too mean to Allison Hannigan. And I'm like, you know, how mean is too mean if you're a supermodel? I mean, Julie Benz, what the fuck? That's really mean. So, I can only imagine. So, we'll never know how bad the mutant enemy truly was until like Marty Noxon or someone wants to make more Buffy. Then they'll just pretend like there was no Joss Whedon. Like,
is Joss going to do comics though? Like, is he going to do film? What's going on with?
I mean, he's got the HBO thing that was made like 3 years ago that's coming out, but like. I don't see that, like, being watched. Like, I'm not going to watch it. Like, I mean, I might. I mean, I watch anything, really. But, like, there's no enthusiasm for, like, a Doctor Who ripoff.
Right.
Yeah. Like, all this Victorian revisionist history fantasy shit is repulsive, too. It's like all this fantasy shit, all the same. It's this poisonous Downton Abbey shit.
Yeah.
People who are, yeah, no, I say no to that. It's called the Nevers for a reason, I guess. It's in the title. I never intend to watch it. But I would if it was, like, set in the presence and they were, like, dressed in, like, modern, like, hot girl clothes and, like, it was properly objectifying, but like had like fake inclusive dialogue. So it's like, yeah, these are good people. That's what I like.
So with Justice League, with the Snyder Cut, there was a big, you know, we were going to have, I wanted to have Walter on, Movie Dweller on Twitter. You should all go follow at Movie Dweller. Because he was
He's
one
correct.
Of the, what?
He's correct.
He was correct. He was from the get-go saying that there's an alternate cut. It needs to come out. And
he was first, yes, not Fiona Zhang or the people in the...
Yes, Walter came out and said that the Snyder Cut, he said this is kind of the key to cultural healing. This is the thing that needs to come out because it's going to right so many wrongs in the culture. And it's been funny because over the years, Justice League, the Joss Whedon version that came out in 2017. Ever since then, there's been this push to get the Snyder Cut out. And the hatred for this movement on the part of the press has been amazing. And it was so...
And fans. Just the press.
Oh, fans, the press. There were so many people who did not want this to come out that I assumed it was never going to happen. I was wrong. I thought the Snyder Cut was never going to come out.
Gaslit.
Well, and I'm going to say too, you know, Zack Snyder for years, he was putting out movie after movie. You know, he did after he did 300, you know, he was putting out, he did Watchmen, he did Sucker Punch, he did Guardians, Owls of Ga'Hoole.
It was a steady pace of work.
Yeah.
Like a steady output.
And every movie he put out did well, as far as I know. I'm not backing this up with, but you know, he just was working so consistently. It was like every movie he did, critics would say it was horrible, it sucks. Like the popular opinion was Zack Snyder sucks, but his movies constantly did well. And I loved his films. But when Justice League happened and Joss Whedon was brought in, I kind of felt like during that time that Zack Snyder was, that Warner Brothers wanted to get rid of him. And, once he stepped aside because his daughter committed suicide and he needed to leave and focus on his family, I kind of felt like it was Hollywood's excuse to kind of get rid of him because there was so much pressure. And Zali, your takes are more, you know, third eye open than mine. But it felt to me like there was just this hatred of him and his movies. And
he's not.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It just felt like everybody wanted to get rid of him. And when Justice League happened, it was like they got rid of this director that they all hated. And this film kind of feels like, I know he's done another movie. It hasn't come out, Army of the Dead, or it's another zombie. It's kind of a return to his roots, I guess, with Dawn of the Dead. But with this Snyder Cut, I didn't think it was going to happen, but the campaign against it was so intense, so furious. And even in the last few days, as the movie was coming out, everybody was saying, this is giving toxic fandom what it wants. And I look at all these articles about it, and it's these people saying that there's this fandom and they say all these horrible things, but they don't link to any real threats or anything, or anything they do link to is pretty benign. It's just a person saying, hey, you're wrong and you don't know what you're talking about,
or we live in a society here's Pepe.
Okay, you know. Zali, putting "we live in a society" in the trailer. It's not in the film, but it's in the trailer. Joker saying, what is that?
We live in society. So yes, we are cognizant. We know this is in the zeitgeist. This is a recursive movie. This is not just a restored movie, but it is a reflective and recursive movie.
Yeah, because when I played that trailer for my wife, because she's a big fan of the Snyder DC movies. And so when this was coming out, I showed her the trailer. And when Joker goes, "We live in a society," she goes, "Wait, wait, wait."
Yeah, I had the same reaction.
She goes, "Are they allowed to say that? What's going on?" She was genuinely like, "Wait, what are they doing?"
Yeah, I kind of thought that probably wasn't going to be in the actual movie, maybe, because I think that there's a lot of misdirection and trail. Not to say like I'm so smart, but that statement alone is like, once again, yes, we are totally down with the chance. We see what you're seeing, and you see what we are saying back to you. And I know a lot of people don't like Jared Leto because he's like a rock star / cult leader. But like, I mean,
it's true. It's totally true.
It is.
He's not joking.
He was there to do the toy movie 2 times and 3 times. And again, 5 years later. So I guess he's not bigger than the Batman toy business.
He's the first 2-time Joker in cinema.
Yes, he is. That's true.
And Walter is right. He is the greatest living Joker now. Because he is. Now people on the internet will be like, "Well, you know, that Joker scene was like a premonition or a nightmare. It's not authentic, real, you know, meat and potatoes Joker time." I don't care.
Who cares? No.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, Richard Juice on Twitter suggested the Joker is based on Razor Fist. Who hated the film, by the way. Razor Fist.
Oh, yeah, he hates.
On his video, I don't agree with this guy most of the time, by the way. Razor Fist was saying, they've just cynically learned how to pander to the anti-SJW crowd when they put that quote in the trailer. And, you know, that's what they're banking on is all the, you know, the other half of the country excited to see this as like a statement against like the MCU woke shit.
I mean, yeah, but Zack Snyder's whole reel, I thought, was like when he does actual like professional PR shit is via walk softly, smile.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's very Canadian.
In fact, I saw a lot of people, because Zack Snyder is very, like you said, he seems very genteel and kind in interviews. He doesn't edge signal or anything like that. Because I remember when 300 came out, everybody said that Zack Snyder is a right-wing psychopath and he's a neocon and that he's making this film as a pro George Bush statement or something. And Zack Snyder would just go, "I don't know what you're talking about." You know, like
he did shill for Joe Biden last fall. So there could be some neoliberal neoconservative.
He does. Shit. Yeah. Like, I think Zack Snyder does the Hollywood bit, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw some people getting mad because, you know, oh, he said he was on some stream and...
Oh, yeah, gamers, geeks and gamers.
Yeah, and he was saying that, like, I'm against hate or something. And, you know, it's all that stuff you're expected to say, right? I mean,
you know. Yeah, well, did Razor Fist expect him to, like, call for Day of the Rope or something?
Yeah, I mean, what do you want? Like, these people on the internet, what do they want him to go, like, "Nah, man, I stand with the edgelords." Like, this guy stands, he's in a very fragile position. And
yes, he is.
And he knows that.
He's in danger every day in Hollywood. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a generic, like, American person.
Yeah,
I just thought ever since, like, 300, like, this guy is, you know, definitely. Because, now, the thing that 300 upset a lot of people, but, I don't care. It's all, like, I like the extreme Frank Miller-ness. But that is why. Because Frank Miller is perceived as being very right-wing. So if you're voluntarily doing this Frank Miller's, you know, screed against, you know, the Persian Empire, you know, a million years ago, then you're going to come away with things. And back in the day, you know, they had a good commercial reason to attach it to the perpetual war in Iraq and Afghanistan under George Bush.
In fact, when I heard that take, I thought it made total sense. But now, if you look at the film, it seems like it exists out of time. You know,
out of time completely. Completely. And it's totally against interventionist liberationing and so forth. It's all about protecting little nest and never ever under any circumstances, you know, surrendering or cucking or apologizing or kneeling ever.
Yeah.
It's actually an isolationist historical fantasy.
Yes.
Because they're protecting Greece or, you know,
Sparta,
that territory.
Specifically.
Trying to bring democracy to Persia or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's about lifting weight stuff.
Yeah. You know, like you have to consider that Sparta and Athens were two completely different cultures. You know, in fact, after this war, Sparta and Athens went to war with each other in an even bloodier war, the Peloponnesian War.
We should have gotten a sequel to that depicting that war.
Yeah, well, we got the one with the Athenians, 300 Rise of the, what was it called? Rise of the Empire?
Rises.
Rises, yeah. 300 Rises. The Peloponnesian War is fascinating because when Thucydides wrote about it, he wrote about it as a way that history repeats itself. Like he used it as a way of saying that this is how conflict generates in regions. And it's a really interesting example of early history. But when you look at 300, it seemed on its face at the time, it was hard not to see it as a Bush era fantasy, but it's really not, you know. And when you look at it today, it's kind of weird that we ever thought it was. But
everybody was so on edge back then about Bush, and you know, John Kerry gotten thrashed at the election booth, and so it was, you know, certain crowds were very eager to jump at anything that they perceived as pro-war, pro-military.
And movies were so political at the time. I just remember every prestige film was political.
And boy, we have not recovered from it ever since, because everything is so goddamn political. You cannot watch movies to escape anymore. It's really, you know.
Well, so talking about Justice League, you know, the version that Joss Whedon put out, I thought was a lot more political than the Snyder Cut.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, I think one thing Walter talked about, and if he was here, I would have asked him about this. But one thing he talked about was that most content, like I saw somebody was telling him on Facebook, I can't wait for this movie to pass so that you'll talk about real movies again. And he goes, this is a real movie. He goes, most content today is propaganda. And this is a real movie. And I was thinking about that. And I was thinking that Joss Whedon's Justice League, it has a lot of political statements in it. There's a scene with a skinhead with a shirt that says MAGA Horde. Who looks like Chris Cantwell. Like they got a Chris Cantwell lookalike. To play this part where he's attacking.
I should have had him talk and go, these superheroes.
Yeah. Hey, what's going on with these superheroes? They kind of seem funny to me.
The others.
It's during the opening credits. You see him attacking like a Muslim business.
Oh, yeah. And he's a Batman themed mega shirt on.
Yeah.
I remember in the theater laughing out loud when I saw it. It's so pitch perfect. I loved it. And the homeless lady, and then the Muslim lady with her fruit gets kicked over.
Yeah.
That Superman newspaper. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
I wish they would have put it in the Snyder Cut to make it longer.
Yeah.
But you know, can't have our perfect world.
I know. But you had a lot of stuff about, like, you know, the ice caps. There would be these little lines put in that were very political, but none of that was in Snyder's film.
None of it.
It was
completely apolitical.
Yeah.
And, like, mythical.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking was, you know, when I was watching it, I was going, Snyder, he photographs these actors like they're Greek gods. You know, he goes to that, he has them go to that BDSM gym, John, that you talk about. And,
Jim Jones.
Yeah, he has a.
They kettlebell him and starve him and throw him on Schwinn Aerodynes for Tabata workouts and everything.
Yeah, like, you know, he just sculpts them into these Greek gods, you know, and we got a lot of like kind of chick 300 stuff with the Amazons, and it's in the Joss Whedon one, but it's amped up big time.
Yeah, there's like a whole movie of Amazons in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Amazons here come off like incredibly strong and way more dangerous than they do in the whatever that Wonder Woman movie was. They filmed like 5 times, or I lost count. Okay. Zolly probably has an actual count.
I only saw it once on HBO Max when it was on, and that was enough. Well, I could no repeat content minutes there.
Well, like the Wonder Woman movie, the first one, I didn't see 84, but the first Wonder Woman movie, when that came out, everybody was talking about that it was one of the great superhero movies. Oh my gosh, it's so awesome. And when I finally watched it, I thought it sucked.
It was not good.
It's terrible, but the secret of Wonder Woman number one is that before things got bad at the house of Detective Comics, Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon, you know, united the league and made Wonder Woman supposedly a decent movie for blue check and elitist consumption.
Yeah.
Because that movie was supposedly refilmed a lot, and it has a very Snyderian look with focus pulling, mm-hmm. not focus pulling, speed ramping, and the color scheme, and the way light hits metal. It has a Snyderverse look about it.
Yeah. John, did you see the Joss Whedon version of Justice League, or did you just see the Snyder cut?
I saw it in a theater a Thanksgiving morning, if I recall correctly, and I thought it was just kind of forgettable. You know? And I felt like I didn't know at the time. I didn't sense how much of the Snyder version was real, because remember at that time Warner Brothers was claiming there's no Snyder cut, and Whedon's only coming in to like reshoot a few scenes and supervise post production.
Yeah,
and Snyder's name is not on the credits. He's not. It's not directed by Joss Whedon.
No,
he
got a.
That was a very awful thing to do in retrospect.
Yeah. Whedon got a screenwriting credit. That was it. When you watch the both, it's fascinating to watch the movies back to back. So I watched both of them one after the other. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that Whedon showed is it's very interesting, because the stuff that even the stuff that Snyder shot has everything trimmed out of it to make it as tight as possible in Whedon's version. Like the terrorist attack where they introduce Wonder Woman in the movie. You know, that is a very quick scene in Whedon's film, and it plays out longer, but it has more tension in Zack's version.
It's way, way more tense, and things are emphasized that are not emphasized in the Whedon version. Like I haven't seen the Whedon version since that Thanksgiving when I saw it. And I was recalling scenes as I watched this. I said, hey, this is in the Whedon version, but it was brighter and quicker, and it didn't seem to mean anything, or the music was different or whatever, you know, which I guess was the case. And I was like, wow, they really distorted Snyder's tone. And I didn't know you could change a tone of a scene just by making a few tweaks here and there. Like, the vlog guy, or the vidcast guy, Sean Zubox, on the Zubox thing on YouTube, he was talking about how the scene with Aquaman with the whiskey bottle in the Joss Whedon version is very funny. Mm-hmm. But in this version, it's very somber, like a Tom Waits video.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
And it's the same scene. It's the same footage, everything, but it's color corrected differently, or it's edited differently, and the music is different. And it's like, wow, you know, I didn't know you could change a film that much just by doing those little tweaks.
I want to use it in my film class, honestly, to show how drastically you can alter something. And, even with the music, you know, Danny Elfman did the Whedon version, and they got the guy Junkie XL His name is his real name, Tom Hulkenberg, on the credits, but it's Junkie XL, who did the music for the Snyder Cut, and even that changes the tone of certain scenes drastically. Like, you know, the scene where they all fight Superman. In Whedon's version, it actually works really well in Whedon's version, but it's kind of funny. One of my favorite little bits in that is when Superman looks at the Flash as he goes by, and the Danny Elfman score makes it kind of funny, but it's part of a bigger thing in the Snyder.
The huge battle. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't, it's not as played for laughs in that. It's a little more of a, this is another moment in this intense thing we've been building towards.
Which should be scary because Superman's basically turned on the superheroes.
Yeah.
So it should be a tense, and suspenseful scene.
It works better overall, you know, even though it is good for a laugh when you play it that way. I just felt like a lot of the moments in Zack Snyder's version, they work on a bigger scale. They all kind of come together to give you these scenes that are tense, like all the stuff with Aquaman in the like Icelandic fishing towns or whatever country those were in. You know, like you said, they had this different feel to them. Whereas in the Joss Whedon version, they put more jokes in. There's more kind of smarmy humor. There's more, you know, Batman going, "Hey, that's not what that means. That's the opposite of what that means." You know.
The Snyder version, it's more like a spaghetti western or something. And I mean, the whole movie is a remake of Magnificent Seven or Seven Samurai.
It feels a lot like that and Lord of the Rings a little bit.
Let's get the boxes. Yeah, we can't destroy the boxes, you know?
Yeah, and there's like the stuff with Darkseid, you know, it reminded me of, you know, we all have our rings and we must take them away and destroy. You know?
Right.
I almost expected somebody to tell Isildur to destroy the ring or to go down.
Well, the main thing that I think I probably told this to John on Twitter, but the Joss Whedon version is like the Raymond Burr version of Godzilla, and Godzilla is the real thing. The Snyder Cut is the real thing from which the other thing is made, but you have two, because. Well, Joss Whedon basically did. The main value of Joss Whedon's contribution is the Danny Elfman score, which I love because it uses, you know, the Batman and Superman theme.
Yeah, yeah.
But he filmed basically this whole, like, wraparound, wraparound with Alfred and Bruce Wayne, Jimmy Irons and Ben Affleck in, like, a plane just discussing shit. And... And that allowed them to skip over 80% of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you just have, like, Bruce Wayne say, like, "Well, you know, well, Alfred, hopefully this works out." And there's very little of that in the Snyder Cut. But in the Joss Whedon cut, most of Bruce Wayne's dialogue is with Jimmy Irons in that. And he just describes events.
Yeah.
Like, "I don't know about Cyborg. Maybe he's not going to join us." And that allows you to not have the other characters in the movie, which totally makes sense if you're Warner Brothers and you're like, this movie is a Batman movie. Nobody cares about Cyborg or Aquaman or the Flash that's not on the CW. And, you know, I understand that, but, you know, they were wrong.
Yeah.
I was wrong, I guess, for liking it. But, I mean... there's no way they were going to put a 4-hour this movie in the theaters back in 2017.
Well, that's right. Another thing was how much of this, you know, would the movie have looked like this back then? Because, you know, it's obviously they added new things for this version. It's much longer
they
than
added
it would
new
have
things,
been.
But how, like, if you take out a lot of this, if you take out everything, you know, everything Flash, everything Cyborg, and just have, you know, Batman talk to Wonder Woman twice and one discussion about maybe bringing Superman back to life, you still, they're still very long. And you'd end up having something like Cool World. The fact that Joss Whedon was able to salvage their U.S. theatrical cut of Heaven's Gate style, you know, obliteration of Zack Snyder's movie is actually something of a mitzvah on his part. Because he did two nice things for this theatrical cut. He gave it the Danny Elfman score. And the Danny Elfman score really sold his mustache, Henry Cavill, contributions to the movie, which is the other secret part, where Henry Cavill was recalled to redo his entire Superman performance, or really just two scenes that we saw. And the return of Superman in the theatrical cut is probably the greatest DC movie moment like ever. Mm-hmm. But and I don't mean to sound too enthusiastic about that. I mean, it's very stupid. It's very schmaltzy. And the Snyder Cut is a revision of that, and kind of like more of a political... It's the only political statement in the movie, really, is that we will defend Cyborg Victor Stone. He is the greatest of the Super Friends. that is the thing. Oh, it's... No, I like that, too, but the really repulsively stupid big fan of Justice Superman theme and punch to Steppenwolf, that's just so good. That's so good. But nothing in the two versions nullify each other. Like, that also happened probably. Like we weren't looking at that, but he also said and choose Justice and punched him under slightly different circumstances. That's my headcanon, as the kids on the internet say. But yeah, that's the main value of the Joss Whedon version is that exchange at the last third of the movie.
The Joss Whedon version is also highly toyetic to me. Like the the final act is super toyetic. I remember you saying the last third is kind of a lot of fun, you know, and
it's fun.
Yeah, it just works. Like, it's colorful. It's, you know, it's silly. Yeah, it's got that Joss Whedon smarminess, but there's just something about it where it's just like Joel, our good friend and, you know, RIP Joel Schumacher would say, who's highly toyetic.
Yeah,
but the greatest toyetic moment of the Batmobile rampage through Chernobyl. it's in both versions. And the best version, the best moment of that rampage is one of the Budmen shoots a laser at the Batmobile and it flips. And Batman, while the Batmobile is flipping, he ejects from the Batmobile, mm-hmm. In Dying 2.
Yes.
And then he bat ropes to the Chernobyl Tower. That is the greatest Batmobile moment in my entire lifetime of Batman and cinema.
I gotta tell you though, the Batmobile in the Snyder Cut, when it shows up, it's a big moment in that version.
It's so great. It's so
when
great.
It showed up, I was clapping in my seat. I went woo, and my wife was like, all right, yeah, and we'd seen that same moment in the Whedon version, but it didn't have that build-up. It didn't have that punch. And
it just appealed. The Whedon Batmobile Rampage through Chernobyl has the benefit of being partially cut to Danny Elfman's Batman Returns score.
Yes.
When Alfred says, all the greatest hits, which is a total Whedon ad, it just seals the toyetic cum fest into the ages. But
well, by the way, I should suggest, I would like to add that probably one reason it has so much impact when it appears is, remember in the Whedon cut, we already see Batman in the first 20 minutes, on that West Side Story type of rooftop set, harassing the guy from the David Fincher movies.
And they also set up that weird thing where the bug men smell fear.
Yeah. body of fear. I love that also, because Steppenwolf, his minions turn on him, like, and I like that. But I like how they
his minions are bugmen, by the way. So
yes, bugmen. Is there a message there?
Yeah.
Of course, it is a direct message that Jack Kirby believed that those who worship anti-life would be bugmen and make that gritting teeth. you know, Arthur hands. I'm upset. Like, oh no. It's very clear. Jack Kirby is very clear with his, you know, new gods in Fourth World, and that was very clear.
Yeah.
It's canon. They are ironically and unironically bugmen.
Yeah, I hadn't read New Gods in like 20 years in one of those reprints or whatever, so I didn't even remember the bugmen.
Nobody actually gives a shit about New Gods. The only way right. people parademons is through crossovers, and they're just dark side's henchmen. They don't have names, lives, identities.
Have they canceled that Avra Duvany New Gods project yet?
I don't think that people are too keen on Avery DuVernay, you know, warmingly empowering people with dark side's invasion of Earth.
Yeah. It's like, well, she's the wrong director for that sort of thing. I mean, yeah. I was wondering if this would even cancel the whole J.J. Abrams DC slate.
I don't even believe that the J.J. Abrams plans are real. I think these are all just threats. Like, what if, like threats to potential failures of Jason Kilar's platform? Because if HBO Max doesn't go, mm-hmm. then it's Bad Robot all the way. And that's the darkest possible fate for the human race, I think.
Well, the thing is, it's like, to me, it reminds me of the Jack Black Green Lantern thing.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like that was just sort of a litmus test to throw out there to see what the reaction would be.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, there's an immense corporate boomer drive for Black Superman, but they don't really know how to actualize that because they want Superman to be Clark Kent and be white.
Right.
But they want, like, they don't know what they want over at the Brothers Warner. They just have things they want, like Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian and the sequel
Space Jam. They've been talking about that for like 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really strikes me as weird is, why don't they make a Batman Beyond black? I mean, the guy who invented Batman Beyond was black.
Yeah, why not? I mean, that's an easy way to do it.
I mean, is that way you can show it, like, this is not Bruce Wayne's identical son or whatever. This is like a different person.
Right.
Batman.
That'd be a total way to do it. I'd be up for that.
I mean, that makes sense. But he's like Dwayne McDuffie, like he named him McGinnis because. But I would, you know, my expertise on Batman Beyond goes all the way back, so I can speak definitively.
Uh-huh.
I can speak definitively.
Yeah, I keep. I'm wondering if this is gonna completely shake up the idea of the DC universe and how it's gonna affect future projects. That's gonna be an interesting thing to see. Obviously, I think it's probably been a success on streaming, or it's done well for HBO Max.
It's the biggest thing ever. It's bigger than Star Wars.
Yeah,
it's as big as Star Wars. Not bigger than. It's as big as Star Wars.
It's kind of changed the game. It's basically the Star Wars of streaming, in many ways. And it's like, is this going to shake up how they do the next slate of DC films? Like, are they going to reassess and put things back under Snyder's vision? And how does this endanger that Batman movie they're filming with the Twilight Kid?
Well, so something that I heard them say was that, I have no problem with this. I don't need superhero movies to all be connected in some way. So I heard somebody from Warner Brothers or something. I can't remember. I don't have a source for this, but I remember seeing someone say that we can have two versions of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like we can have Ben Affleck over here doing the Snyder thing. And then we can try out Robert Pattinson over here. But my thing is that those two are two. Like, I would rather have an Adam West-style 60s Batman and the Ben Affleck-style Batman, you know? I'd rather have something that's a contrast. But what I've kind of... The thing I've sussed out was I liked comic book movies a lot more before they got Cadillac'd with Marvel. and they all had to have the same tone, and there had to be this uniformity, and it had to be like a big budget TV show. I kind of liked it when, you know, you'd have, here's what David Goyer's doing with Blade. Here's what Sam Raimi's doing with Spider-Man. Here's what they're doing with Punisher. And, you know, you get this mixed results, but they were more like real movies that were coherent within themselves. And so having it be like, okay, we can have this Batman over here and that Batman over there, I think that's totally cool, you know?
Well, the problem with Warner Brothers, though, is when you had different properties adapting different Marvel titles independently, they all had to make each one of their titles like good. Like Blade had to be like good. It had to be good enough to make Bob Shea money and like happy. And, you know, Spider-Man had to work for Sony. But with Warner Brothers, you know, all Batman is Batman. It doesn't matter if it's Lego, it doesn't matter if it's cartoon. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no special attention. I mean, I'm kind of morally opposed to the Matt Reeves, Robert Pattinson Batman movie because it exists sort of as a part of the ramrodding of Snyder's whole DC operation.
Well, that's why I've been rooting for it to fail, because it felt like we're undoing Snyder. We're moving past that. We had Justice League. It failed because we sabotaged it. You guys obviously don't want it because it's Zack Snyder, right? You guys don't like Zack Snyder because all the critics don't like Zack Snyder. So we're going to get the kid who did the Planet of the Apes movies to come over here and do it. And it's going to be edgy. It's going to be gritty. It's going to be dark, you know?
It's going to be so dark you can't see a damn thing in the trailer.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Matt Reeves. I don't consider him a proper director of movies, because those Andy Serkis ape movies are, you know, cartoons. They, you know, they have only a couple of humans here and there. It's like Cool World.
They don't have the handmade quality that made Planet of the Apes exciting. And I'm going to say even the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie.
Well, it's still people in ape costumes in sets.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was listening to a podcast recently. A podcast, I'm going to plug it. It's a great podcast. It's Lores Wonder Bread. His podcast Movies, go look him up. Low Res Wonder Bread, Wonder with a U, Wonder Bread.
Yeah, I follow him on Twitter. He's a good guy.
Yeah, great guy, great memes, fantastic. But he was musing on his podcast. I was listening to some episodes he did on like Batman or something. I can't remember. They were saying like, what is it about? What is it that Tim Burton's movies have lost? You know, his movies used to be great. Kind of what happened, and I think that CGI happened. Tim Burton's films had this handmade quality to them. Even stuff he was only tangentially involved with, like Nightmare Before Christmas. Like you look at something like Edward Scissorhands or Ed Wood or even his Planet of the Apes movie. They have this handmade quality to them that his movies just don't have anymore. Because they all exist in the CG universe, like everything else, like all the CG movies that imitate him. You know, you can't tell them apart.
Once you're just approving animations, you're not really connected to the act of filmmaking anymore. I know that sounds, you know, terrible as someone who's only done student work, but, you know, I can criticize from, you know, here and say that, you know, if you're just, you know, approving shit, you're not scouting locations, you're not having, you know, having freakouts about where shit is or equipment. You're just, you know, whatever, do it again, bud.
You're not compositing shots. You're not framing anything out. You're just signing off on the animation assignments.
No, mind you, I'm giving him the benefit of the benefit of the doubt and assuming that he has storyboards and they're making them from the storyboards. But in reality, it's really a storyboard artist and he's really in charge of the mise-en-scene of everything. And yeah, so you're basically doing nothing at that point. But, you know, who cares? It's money.
Yeah. But they're I don't know how we got to Tim Burton, but, you know, it just makes me...
Well, I mean, he started the Batman business. Started the Batman business. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, you even feel it in Joss Whedon's Justice League. Not so much in the Snyder one. I mean,
there's
echoes of it.
There's a visual homage to It's kind of weird. It's religious. Everything in the Snyder movie is religious.
It is.
But there's this scene at the end of the movie in Batman, right when Batman is lifted up by Superman on the Chernobyl Tower, and Batman is trying to climb up by himself. That is a shot you see repeated from Batman 1989, which is Batman, you know, hanging on the ledge. But I think the religious implications are that for the last 30 years, Batman has been trying to support himself on ledges alone. Now he's lifted up. Batman is lifted up. Because he's posed exactly the way Michael Keaton Batman is posed after he defeats the Joker when he's hanging on the thing with Kim Basinger. Mm. So there's no way it's someone who paints with light didn't do that on purpose. Everything, you know, Mr. We Live in a Society guy. Of course it's on purpose. It was very clear. So yeah, that is the final DNA speck of Tim Burton's Batman as it endures into the 21st century. Well, yeah, in the 21st century.
I think it endures. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same costume house makes the goddamn costume.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, something that I think I've said this before, but something I've always loved about Affleck's Batman is that we have a CGI cape so he can actually move.
On some, like, you know, on a childlike control freak like level, I don't like the idea of CGI cape. Just keeps him real.
Yeah.
But whatever is more comfortable for the human being on set is best. So, like, the costume is partially digital. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, when I was watching Batman versus Superman, and I'm seeing Batman go in this room and take out all these guys towards the end in this room, and it was so sublime. And I was thinking they could never have done that with Bale or Keaton or Kilmer or any of those guys because, you know, they have this big, unwieldy suit to wear. And, you know, Nolan had his insistence on analog everything. But the way that there was just this movement that Affleck's Batman has that really feels like I'm looking at, you know, a Frank Miller comic book or something.
Well, that fight scene looked like a Neil Adams panel brought to life. Mm. You know, it's because he could move around, he could kick, and he could jump, and he could do all this stuff that all the other Batmans were like Robo Bat, you know, RoboCop.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the costumes before then were limited, but the fact that the not having a 100-pound cape on the guy is helpful.
Yeah, that definitely helps.
Something about
that was the key.
Because I mean, we don't think about it, but like I know in the Christian Bale ones, the cape is like, you know, parachute shit. But even that is probably like to drape properly. Weighed like 30 or 50 pounds.
Yeah.
And I know that like Ben Affleck isn't like actually in the suit doing the fights and whatever, but like there's only so much a stuntman can do in a Michelin Man suit. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what it is.
Yeah, because there was Keaton's fight double in his two movies. Yeah, that guy can move. He could do a lot of cool stuff. He's actually fighting Stallone at the end of Tango and Cash. And he could do a lot of cool stuff, but he could only do so much in that big scuba suit they had him wearing, you know?
I still think the 89 costume, and that's the one that's seared into my brain as being the best, but it's certainly the one that everyone is chasing. Because otherwise, the idea of giving Batman like a rubber dildo costume, just they wouldn't do it if it wasn't because of that movie. They'd give him some sort of a cloth shit thing.
Yeah, I remember liking the Batman Dead End, the fan film costume, quite a bit. But
that was made
with the total. I don't know why they didn't just hire that Sandy Calera guy to just do a costume.
He's too upset.
Yeah.
About things to get wide recognition for all his achievements. But he invented the Jurassic Park logo. It's his logo. He should be praised for that logo. Every time people see a Jurassic World sequel, they should say, thank you, Sandy, for making this so I can enjoy Chris Pratt and Jessica Chastain.
the other things about it is, or what I noticed was the Flash, the intro of the Flash, I thought was the best scene in the whole movie.
Yes, it's very heterosexual.
Yes, it's it's very heterosexual. It's perfectly choreographed. It is perfectly shot and edited. It's brilliant, the way they did the music and everything. It's fantastic.
It is great. It is. It shames both fake Spider-Men and says that there is a correct way to do Spider-Man, and that is the slow motion way.
Yeah,
and you're talking about this. You're talking about the scene where Bruce Wayne meets him at his pad.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also the saving of Chrissy Clemens. Yeah, sorry, my screen changed for a second. I don't know why. That was very scary for a second.
Yeah, I thought the whole saving of the girl thing, I said that's like the best superhero moment in movies I've seen in years. That reminded me of like in the 78 Superman movie, what I call the last really great scene in that film was where he rescues Lois from the helicopter.
The thing that's falling. Don't talk about anymore because of the official superhero media, that 90% of the superhero thing is saving women.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, that in the Whedon cut, the only reason we had that Russian family in there, which was not in the Snyder cut, the only reason we had that in there is so they could get saved by Flash later.
Yeah, you know. To prove that the Flash is not. Yeah, no other characters except Superman and Batman in the Whedon cut have any value at all.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because like as a Batman purist, I'd be like, well, yeah, that makes sense. But when you see the full, complete epic, the Snyder Cut, you realize this is Cyborg and the Flash's movie, actually.
Well, yeah. I wanted to talk about Cyborg, because Ray Fisher, you know, I think a lot of people were acting like he was this whiner or this complainer for years. You watch the Snyder Cut and you go, yeah, he was robbed.
Yeah, he was totally. Yeah, we didn't really Jim Crow'd him with that cut.
It was so you have this big backstory with him in the Snyder Cut, and in the Whedon version, Flash and Cyborg are exhuming Superman. What happened to you? Oh, I got struck by lightning. What about you? Oh, I got blown up in a lab and dad brought me back to life.
Yeah.
That's it.
The Whedon version ruins it. Yeah.
It's so shitty. And then his character is like all the emotional weight in the movie is Cyborg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you have all this stuff with his dad, which, you know, he has the same fate as his character in Terminator 2. The whole thing with Cyborg and his dad, it has zero weight in the Whedon version, and it's huge in this film. And
it's all everything in this movie.
Yeah, this stuff with Cyborg,
was moved when he was tempted when he saw him with his teenage self with his mom and dad, like, and it was that whatever henchman villain that was basically creating an illusion or whatever. Mm-hmm. I thought that was actually pretty moving. I went, wow. Oh, yeah. I'm actually feeling some emotion with this CGI shit. It's just like, oh.
You have to, the satanic machine has to give you the deal.
And yeah. You have
to take the deal.
Exactly. I thought that was perfect. It was like a great scene. It's like, I don't blame that actor at all for being pissed off.
Cyborg's character was completely ruined in the theatrical cut. Yeah. And a lot of things were, the first thing they did to ruin him, and this is something they talk about a lot on the websites, but they, you know, the studios were uncomfortable about, you know, Cyborg being, you know, a torso man. And so when the Whedon reshoots, they reshot the Cyborg, you know, experiment that turned him into Cyborg to show that, you know, he has a dick and balls and most of it. But and the grimmest shit, the realest grimmest shit in the real version is You see him on a ventilator, and there's fucking nothing left of him. And that's, you go from Cyborg dying in a hospital bed to saving the world. That's the movies right there.
Yeah.
And all that shit is gone. In the theatrical cut, it's like It's like his dad used the mother box so his football career would be intact or some shit.
Yeah.
That's what that looks like.
And the mother is nowhere to be mentioned. She's nowhere in the...
Yeah, we're just supposed to assume from our knowledge of, you know, the characters that, you know, some... That is just a distant backstory that we don't care about. Now, mind you, when the theatrical was out, we knew enough from behind the scenes to know that there was a mother cast and, you know, football scene shot. But how much, we don't know. But, you know, whatever, it's a Batman movie, not a Cyborg and Flash movie. But
and,
no.
One thing about Flash, too, is in the Whedon version, I thought he was much more grating. I thought Ezra Miller was extremely irritating in the Whedon cut. But part of it was because I did not have that reaction to him in the Snyder cut. And the reason, I think, is not every character is played for laughs in certain scenes, where he feels like the extreme laugh guy in the Whedon version. In the Snyder cut, it seems like he is a comic relief character, but he gets his moments too, where he gets to do his bit. Like, I honestly was on the edge of my seat at that last moment where he runs back in time and he's like, he gets impaled and they're like, Flash, what's going on? He's like, I got the wind knocked out of me and it's all on him. And that scene, I was on the edge of my seat. I didn't know what was going to happen because it was totally different than what went on in the Whedon cut. And I was going, I don't know what they're going to do, you know?
Yeah, the one back in time sequence is another great sequence. And of course, is a reference to Superman the movie, genre's old original. But it does it again, and it's a the thing I like about it, because Earlier in the movie, but before the end battle, Ezra Miller Flash is like, how are we going to save the day? Power of love? That's a literal reference to Back to the Future and time travel. Mm-hmm. That's just a period works. I mean, I've seen the movie 3 times now because, you know, what else is there to do? But I like those future callbacks. That's something Whedon could not do. Whedon is not on the level of someone who could will tell you how the movie's going to end in the middle of the movie. That's like someone who's really read all the screenwriting books and really... Now, Chris Terrio, like, is just some Ben Affleck guy from the Ben Affleck entourage. He's not even like a, you know, like a proper, you know, David Goyer screenwriter.
He wrote Argo, yeah?
Yeah, and then he upgraded to Batman or Superman, which is like the best thing ever. I mean, that's how it works. That's amazing, right? I mean, you go from Argo, because you're Ben Affleck thing, and then you end up doing this and Star Wars. But yeah, he does those alliterations like that. And maybe that's his signature, because his Lex Luthor character does that too, but I like the way that kind of storytelling device works. I know it's cheesy, it's stupid. It's like a Chekhov's gun. Like, I'm going to give you Chekhov's gun, but, well, you know, whatever.
Amazing.
I just think it's amazing. He makes one, you know, the only non-Boston Southie exploitation drama Ben Affleck movie, and then he gets to make, immediately go straight to Batman and Star Wars.
Yeah.
That is the dream. And no Harvey Weinstein even.
No.
That's true. Very true.
I'm still kind of miffed that Kevin had Ben humiliate himself in Jay and Silent Bob Reboot by showing up in that scene and kind of making fun. What?
Yeah, when he's like, "I'm not Batman." That's terrible.
And he's like, "Oh, you find yourself being you're actually what's his name? Thomas Wayne or the mom? Forget her name."
Martha Wayne?
Yeah, you know, because he goes, Martha! In Batman versus Superman. And it just, to me, it hurt to it. Like, Ben already seemed like he was at a low point right then because he was coming off of Justice League, and, you know, it's like he wasn't going to get to be Batman again, and then he shows up in that, and Kevin just has him, like, grovel to Joey Lauren Adams.
Yeah, that scene is very dark and defeatist. Like, you know, sorry, kids, childhood's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got Me Too'd around that time, didn't he?
That was
some girl on a TV interview or something.
And Jennifer Garner dumped him.
Right. He went into rehab as many times as you might go to the golf course or something.
But he did that movie, The Way Back, as kind of his, like, redemption movie, right? That was that was the redemption film.
And 6 or 7 years ago, he was supposed to be like the new Clint Eastwood for Warner Brothers. Like, he was supposed to direct and star in a series of films for them.
Well, he was going to direct the Batman. I mean, before Matt Reeves came on, it was going to be his movie.
That's
true.
That's why, you know, team not Matt Reeves. Because, you know, that was supposed to be Ben Affleck's Batman movie. He's directing and starring Batman project, which he was going to write himself.
Yeah. He was going to fight Deadshot. He was going to be Joe Manganiello's Deadshot character, right?
Supposedly, yeah. That was a pie in the sky promise.
So
that was what they were setting up.
Speaking of Deadshot, you know, we have Leto's two-time thing that where he's the Joker in this movie, like he was in Suicide Squad. I mean, do we think that there's going to be another Snyderverse movie, because they've done this, they have to, right?
Yeah,
they only won't if, like, the people on the Mary Sue decide that it's bad that Henry Cavill did the Hugo Boss campaigns. But then they'd have to go.
There's a lot of truth in what he's saying. Zolly sounds like he's joking, but there's a lot of truth.
The thing is, Zolly is hilarious and correct.
Yes,
at the same time.
Anytime. Like, how Hugo Boss did the Holocaust. And it's over. Anytime, you know. So I'm sure J.J. Abrams is worried about that. That was why he's like, being a black Superman. Because, you know, he's preemptively afraid of the Hugo Boss accost.
And do you think that that's another, the sort of Ta-Nehisi Coates Superman, is that another... Like, we're going to have a parallel Superman to exist alongside the Henry Cavill one, and it's going to just we're going to kind of have our different variations of product, I guess, for different political crowds.
Love the universe of, like, every character and Burt Ward, Robin, you know, having a picnic lunch together, but it upsets the children. Too much of them. They cannot handle more than one Batman. It upsets and enrages them.
Yeah. It's...
And the people in the comic store are much less forgiving than children.
Well, that's true.
Will there be comic stores?
I was about to say, comic stores they're closing pretty quick. You know? Don't you work in one?
There'll be stores that sell Pokemon and that sell comics, but they will not be comic stores. No. Not in the future.
You heard it here first.
So I mean, why would
get your Pokemon?
Would Disney and AT&T want to support, like, a non-Disney store? They could just have a Disney store where people sing the Disney song at the end of the day. You know, comic stores sell porn and Garbage Pail Kids cards. You can slip and fall going in one. It's bad. It's a bad business proposition.
Yeah. You can accidentally pick up one of Gary Groff's published porn comics.
Exactly.
They used to keep fan graphics going.
Were you just talking about Gary Ross, you said?
Gary Groth, the guy, the Comics Journal publisher, you know, he did that line of erotic comic books. He claimed it was to save his publishing empire so he could keep publishing Love and Rockets and Peter Bagg and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be stores that sell vintage comics, but if you're a retailer and just you order things from Diamond and sell them to customers,
yeah,
you can't have a bad reset.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have to make more Zack Snyder Justice. But he might not. He might be like, no, and fuck you guys for being bad. So no more Batman.
He's got that Army of the Dead coming out. But I get the feeling, you know, the thing around the reaction to this is so big. Like, you know, I've seen a lot of positive reaction. I've seen a lot of Zack Snyder haters writing positive reviews. You're seeing a lot of critics begrudgingly give it positive reviews, even though they have to couch it with, by the way, the fans are terrible and the people who want this are all, you know, neo-Nazis or whatever.
Yeah. Right? Bad.
But they're saying that, like, I even saw the dude who writes for RogerEbert.com, Matt Zollerseis. He was like, oh, this is the kind of movie Scorsese was talking about when he said, you know, comic book movies need to aspire to something more.
Yeah, no, it really is.
It's true. It's you know, we're really seeing. I think Snyder's movies have always, his superhero movies have always been real movies, whether it's Watchmen or Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman. And it's really exciting to see Justice League as a Zack Snyder movie, because when you saw the original, it is just so clearly not, even though a lot of that footage is his, you know, it goes to show that in the hands of someone else, you can just completely change it and turn it into something different. And I say that, you know, even, I mean, liking some stuff in that film, you know.
I mean, without mashing, I mean, just, but not having Martian Manhunter is criminal. No matter what I like about the theatrical cut, the trade-offs compared to that and the actual epic length IMAX ratio version, that's the real one. That's the Alien special edition version that exists for all time viewing.
I love seeing it in 4:3. Just gotta say.
Oh yeah, that's great. I like sometimes when the ratio changes between IMAX and Super 35. You can see that the corners are rounded sometimes.
Yeah.
They might change that later, but it, like, it's like, oh, because I in one of my other jobs, I occasionally look at you know, reels for actual film from films, and seeing the edges of the exposed negative. Oh boy.
Hoo boy.
But yeah, I mean, wow, an IMAX thing presented in its, you know, if I was, you know, in charge, I would have done it at 16:9 or maybe 1.90, because, you know, I believe that IMAX should always be 16:9 when presented in the home. But this is Quentin Tarantino's fault for making his last two movies in 265. So Zack Snyder had to be more pretentious than Quentin Tarantino.
Well, he's gotta outdo him, you know.
Well, I mean, he's dealing with Batman, okay? So he has to be, you know, Quentin Tarantino never made a Batman movie. This is bigger than that.
Well, you know, Quentin Tarantino, isn't he going to make a Star Trek movie? Isn't that the latest rumor? Or wasn't it a James Bond movie? How many Tarantino things?
I think his Star Trek movie will come out with the Ty Nancy Coates Superman movie.
Which is never.
Yeah.
Do you think that's not going to happen, the Ta-Nehisi Coates, no. JJ? Yeah, that's just going to be a...
It's something that'll be talked about, but it just won't happen. Because the bad robot, like, wannabe woke stuff comes off as terrible.
Yeah.
And visibly, like, reverse... Like, you can see the elitist racism in their actions. And, like, I think that, like, that the mass market consumer of, like, superhero media and wrestling media cannot tolerate that kind of dishonesty. But, you know, maybe they can. I mean, people like Thor Ragnarok.
But there's something so sincere about Justice League as Zack Snyder envisioned it.
Superman very seriously also. I mean, people were very disturbed by Zack Snyder's Superman. They'd be more disturbed by a wholly different Superman, so to speak.
Yeah.
And Superman same as normal Superman, really.
Yeah, Zack Snyder's Man of Steel, you know, that people had like, they had reactions to that.
Religious terror. I mean, I had religious terror. It's like, whoa. It's like, the Superman has been presented one way, and that's the Donner way.
Yeah.
But the Donner way really comes down to a theme song. The weird thing is, Joss Whedon's theatrical cut proved two things. Is that, you know, the theme music could change the perception of any action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The difference between Donner Superman being, you know, gentle, and Zack Snyder's being, you know, aggressive is really down to the score. Because, you know, I don't mean to say you know all the time. But, I mean, Christopher Reeve Superman, you know, kills the bad guy. He killed Terrence Stamp when he threw him down the pit.
Yeah, he did.
Maybe if you see the director's cut and you see him get arrested by the polar police, but you fall in the pit, you die. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kills you. And the neck breaking in Man of Steel is pretty intense. But that was, once again, of the zeitgeist of that era, of 2013. Noah came out at the same time, and Noah and Man of Steel are very, very, very similar in their approach and their intentions. They mean different things. I mean, I think Noah is really about getting dumped by Natalie Portman. It's about, because like the whole thing when like Russell Crowe wants to kill his family after the world is saved, that's like, how can we live without Natalie Portman?
Why? Yes!
I've made it through the pain, but can I, is life worth it? I mean, mind you, that's just me reading into things. It is, of course, the Flood, but it is also the Natalie Portman.
But what hath the Flood wrought, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, Noah's one I have sitting on my shelf. I need to watch it and Man of Steel, like, back to back just to get the full experience.
Well, yeah, they're very similar. And, you know, Man of Steel has aged very well.
It has. Man, you know, when I showed Man of Steel to my wife, I couldn't believe how well it's aged.
Well, I mean, it's even better now that we know that Martian Manhunter is in it.
Yeah. Now that we know he's been in it. He's been in it this whole time.
It makes every moment better.
I had to explain who Martian Manhunter was when we watched Justice League, the Snyder Cut. Like Martha Kent transforms to Martian Manhunter. Everyone went, what is happening? Hold on.
He also filmed his own version of Martian Manhunter that we have not seen. And I just need the closure.
Had it properly yet. Now, here's the thing. Yes, we've released the Snyder Cut, but we do not have closure. We need to complete the Snyderverse, everybody.
Yeah.
So, Toxic Fandom, I am calling upon you.
You gotta do it. You have to keep on. I want rest until Walter Hamada says we have to restore the Snyderverse, and I stand with Ray Fisher. He's gonna say it. He's gonna say it. I know it. You just need to buy all the McFarlane action figures and come out and celebrate the movie. Yes, I bought the Mattel ones 4 years ago, but those are gone now because they're inferior.
By the way, guess how many reviews there are on IMDb for Zack Snyder's Justice League in just 4 days of release? 4,997 reviews.
Are they from the third world?
I don't know. They're very global. Like, somebody's name is Sayan Biswas, and he gives it a 10 out of 10. Restoring the Snyderverse is essential now.
It's great. He's got great taste. He's a great.
Yes, this is the Justice League movie we deserve. That's a 9 out of 10. A lot of 10 out of 10s. Felt literal goosebumps. Superheroes unite. It leaves you asking for more. 10 out of 10.
Normally, I'm always like the international, you know, box office and concerns are a brand influence. But in this case, with respect to Zack Snyder's DC Comics Universe movies, it is exactly what we need. We need the third world perspective. And their demands, their voices need to be heard loud and clear, because it is, it's my demands.
And if you do not meet their demands, well, you're trying to marginalize them. And we can't accept that.
What you're saying is that Ray Fisher, you don't stand with Ray Fisher, and you're saying Charisma Carpenter had it coming.
Yes.
No, what you're saying. You're saying you're diminishing her experience of abuse. And I always believe women. Okay. You know, I stand with the survivors of abuse, and that's why you have to stand with Ray Fisher and make Justice League 2 and 3 the Zack Snyder way. I mean, you can't make them the exact Zack Snyder way, because the storyboards are out and they leaked them and they have changed some things because of Martian Manhunter. But basically the same. We want to keep it basically the same.
So, John, you know, I haven't heard too much about what you thought of the Snyder Cut. I mean, I get the feeling you liked it, but what was your overall takeaway from it?
Well, I liked it. I don't think anybody except Zolly has sat through this in one sitting.
I wanted to, but I had stuff I had to do, so I had to do like parts one through, you know, prologue through part three in one night,
right.
Part four through the rest in another night. But to be honest, like, I watched The Irishman in one sitting, so I could watch it in one sitting. I'm just saying.
Well, I feel like it's not necessarily designed to be watched in one sitting. I felt like he's making a new type of product. It's basically designed for this new viewing culture we've had post COVID, where people binge watch TV shows like crazy. They probably binge watch movies all day. So now we have basically a product designed for this new streaming audience that has accepted a new format.
Well, something that is entirely unique about the Snyder Cut is that it is probably the first time we've had a movie released to streaming that felt like an event.
Right. It is the first big streaming event. It, like I was telling Zolly during the break, is that this is basically the Star Wars of streaming.
It is, because, like, frankly, I've told people this, streaming, it is so hard to drop a movie onto a streaming platform and make it seem like, okay, it's a big deal, guys. You know, without going to a place, sitting your butt down, buying some popcorn and like watching it and deliberately going out of your way to be a part of this experience. Whereas it's so hard to do that with streaming, but they did it with this movie. But it's going to be really hard to create that with a brand new thing. You know what I'm saying? This has an organic fan campaign behind it, thanks to Walter.
Right.
It's all his fault this happened.
Yeah, no, it is his fault. I spent 4 hours watching this.
But it's not. It's Walter. He was the first Snyder Cut evangelist.
And he was, like you said, he was right. This is cultural healing. But it's funny because he said that the most cinematic, the biggest event is going to happen in the least cinematic, least eventful format possible. It's like inverted. It's weird.
I mean, HBO Max, not what we're speaking about, inverted, and Christopher Nolan, HBO Max is the worst streamer. I mean, all their movies that are not, you know, the Snyder Cut or whatever is brand new for the week are just in normal high definition. And, you know, aside from some Criterion stuff, they got, you know, nothing.
Yeah, have you tried going through their menu options? It takes forever. It is the slowest interface I have ever dealt with streaming, and I've been streaming since 2010.
Yeah,
and it is sluggish. It takes forever for titles to pop up. We've tried to go through all movies, which is what I have to do. You know, it's just like, it drives me nuts.
The good thing is it has HD Babylon 5, which I've decided to rewatch. that's one plus.
Right.
You'll go experience, and HBO Max experience, excuse me.
Yeah, well, I should say that I did feel parts of it did drag. It is slow. However, the slowness does pay off, but I was starting to feel like Hunter has said that Batman Begins was sort of an overcorrection for the Schumacher movies, and I kind of felt like the slow pace was almost like an overcorrection for the Whedon theatrical version, because it seemed to want to rush things along. But everything does pay off. Everything is happening for a reason throughout the 4-hour running time. And it does work well. And I think, like, just to show you the difference between the way Snyder directs and somebody like Whedon or whoever that woman is who directs the Wonder Woman film.
Patty Jenkins.
Allegedly directs. Yeah, Jenkins.
Allegedly.
Yeah, it's like every Snyder knows how to frame it where she looks like a demigod every time you see her in the scene. Like, she's the center of attention. She's the center of the frame. It's a big deal when you see her. It's a big deal when you see any of these heroes. One problem I've had with Whedon is I always said he's the director that made the Hulk boring. Because when the Hulk appears, I don't care. It's like, I don't care who appears.
Like,
you know,
they're actors
in costumes. You know,
Black Widow is the least interesting Marvel hero. Yeah. And she keeps getting screen time and airtime. And part of it is because they don't know how to make these people look good. Like the Marvel films frame these heroes like you know, TV shows, and the Snyder photographs them like they're, you know, it's like when you would get those splash pages before they became totally boring. You'd get these splash pages that just looked amazing in these old comic books.
The uniform production design of the Disney Marvel movies is no fun. I know that they supposedly have such a wonderfully engaged fan base, and they honor their sources so well, but characters don't wear comic costumes. They don't even try to do comic accurate costumes. People shit on the Fox X-Men movies because, like, Wolverine never wore a mask. He never wore a yellow mask. Hawkeye never wore a mask, and Hawkeye just wears a generic normal suit.
Yeah. And he's just Jeremy Renner.
He's basically Bow and Arrow Man, and Black Widow is Catsuit Woman. You know,
it's the last actor I saw in costume as a character for a Marvel movie, was Ben Kingsley as the fake Mandarin. That was the last time they tried to show an accurate translation of an actual Marvel supervillain. And it was a subversive fake thing.
Yeah.
Robert Redford in the one Captain America movie is just some nobody. He's not anyone. He's Robert Redford.
Well, one of the worst films I've seen in the last 30 years is Civil War. Because it's a Marvel movie with no villain. It has no costume villain, nothing. It's just the superheroes fighting each other because of a Russian guy manipulating them. And it was based on a character who I think wears a costume in the comics.
Yeah. The Captain America, Disney Captain America, is very underserved because they had to strip the whole Nazi thing from Hydra, mainly because I think Disney didn't want people to think that it's bad to be a Nazi or something. Then, like, when you remove that and you make Captain America this weird, like, Pat Tillman dude who really wants to save Bucky.
Pat Tillman!
It's not about super soldiers or frozen people or the cost of a forever war. like Team America, basically.
Yeah.
But serious, and as a result, unserious.
What was so stupid about the Captain America movie, I thought, was why not have him punch Hitler? Isn't that the most iconic Captain America image? It's a movie. You could do whatever the hell you want.
They just do him punching Hitler as a comic book in the film, right?
Yeah.
That's how you honor the source. I mean, if you're going to really honor the whole Captain America, the way the Marvel, the Disney Marvel Universe was set up after Iron Man 2, it causes issues. Because I would not have given a solo movie to Captain America or Thor. I think as a character, it works better if you don't know anything about Thor, because explaining Thor is stupid. And the idea of America waking up in the modern world and initially being like shell-shocked and hesitant to do shit is all you need to know, really. Because the Captain America from the 40s that exists in our cultural memory, that is all the primer you need on the character. The Joe Johnson movie, although fun, diminishes the actual ethos of the whole thing. It makes it into something else. It makes it this group effort. Like there's this super team of people who wear bowler hats and they shoot
they kind of ruin the Howling Commandos, who are supposed to basically staff SHIELD, you know?
Yeah, I know. The conflation is weird. I would have the whole Bucky being like an adult man, like I have to follow my adult man into war. I get it. I like the Albert Pien Captain America, and I know it had like $10 as far as its budget, but it captured the mad science, Nazi science, gestaltic.
Well, when I was a kid, that one worked for me just fine.
Yeah, it's the real thing. And for a long time, you know, that was the only Captain America there ever was going to be.
Yeah. I never saw it. I've never seen it. I've heard it's not as bad as people think.
It's not. I watched it on VHS many times when I was a kid. And really, as far as Albert Pune productions go, it's pretty upscale. You know, it stars J.D. Salinger's kid as Captain America.
Right.
So you have that kind of daddy forces me to drink pee rage going through Captain America.
But it captures the whole Captain America conceptually failed in a way, and he has to redeem himself by fighting the good fight in the present. And the Marvel Disney movies gloss over that.
Yeah.
And they don't even hold the military industrial complex accountable, even in like an action movie way. They don't at all. It's just, it's like a given. Like, it's okay that there's all this.
Well, and it goes back to that thing Walter says about movies are just propaganda. A lot of them are kind of designed to keep you in this sort of woke thought prison where, you know, like you said, you won't question the military industrial complex. You might be okay with it because they signal to the woke stuff enough to where you don't really bother them. Whereas, you know, I feel like there's more of a purity to the Snyder stuff. There is a little bit of political stuff there, but it's not the kind of corporate friendly stuff that we get in Disney. And I think that may be something critics are reacting to when they hate it so much.
It's a very physical reactionary, but it's an empathic, it's an empathetic reactionaryism seeing in Snyder's work. Mm-hmm. Like a compassionate reactionary kind of thing. And that's good. I don't mean reactionary in the specifically in the right wing context, but I mean it like in the operatic context.
Well, I often theorize that the reason Man of Steel was greatly hated at the time was because Superman goes to seek advice from like a priest or a reverend or whatever in church, and that seemed. I often wonder if that was the real reason they turned against it, instead of, you know, the snapping in the neck of Zod.
Well, that's the scene that John. I see that scene mocked in memes all the time.
Really?
It's like Zack Snyder. Yeah. Zack Snyder, look, symbolism. Like, because he sits there and Jesus is in a stained glass window in the background, and they mock it for that. But to me, a scene like that has, you know, sort of a humility to it. Superman goes to, he's going to Christ or whoever for guidance, you know, and it's something that makes Superman Superman. You know, he at the end of the day, he is this godlike being, but he's humble, you know.
Yeah, nothing in Man of Steel is actually even out of character. Like, if he snapped fucking Michael Shannon's neck and they played the Superman theme, like, people would think it was good.
It's totally true.
Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, when he throws the nuclear man in a nuclear hole, it's fine. Like, nobody's like, oh, it's terrible. He killed the nuclear man. It's that simple. They get of all the 9/11 imagery, all the human dust and debris on people. If they had the Superman theme, nobody back in 2013 would have cared. I mean, Superman Returns was like a boring movie, like a boring.
Oh, it's so boring. So boring.
But it has a Superman theme, and that is the bare minimum it takes for people to accept Superman.
Well, you know, and speaking of that with Batman, you know, think about the Michael Keaton Batman films. Okay? Michael Keaton's Batman straight up murders people, but no one had a problem with it, because you had Danny Elfman's Batman theme blaring and it was exciting. Yeah. But then in Batman versus Superman, Batman's like branding villains to have them killed in prison, and everybody had this big problem with it. A lot of these bloggers and YouTubers were like, oh my gosh, this Batman's so evil. And I was going, how is that any different than what we had in the past?
No, yeah, every Batman movie in the movies kills henchmen and stuntmen with reckless, wanton abandon.
Yes!
And it's never brought up as even like a violent act. Like, you can't just shoot a missile at a car full of henchmen. And it's okay. No, it's Batman does it, and there's no problem. They only held it against Ben Affleck Batman, I think, because I think the thing they don't like is he uses a gun to shoot a flamethrower, which causes it to explode. But I mean, that's a direct thing from TDKR. Where,
yeah, that's a Frank Miller thing.
And the closer you get to the end of the movie, Batman is allowed to kill more henchmen the closer you get to the time running out. So, I mean, there's nothing objectionable. He wasn't killing the henchmen. He was saving Martha.
Yes.
He outsmarted what Joel Schumacher said. And someone asked him about, like, you know, is it bad when, you know, Batman killed Tommy Lee Jones like that? He said, no, he outsmarted him. He defeated him heroically. And I stick by that justification. It's toyetic.
Yes.
Action.
The most toyetic.
Yeah.
All about it. All right, guys. Anything we need to add about the Snyder Cut before we go?
You guys want to talk about this epilogue?
Yeah.
The apparently consists of all the new stuff shot for the film.
The wrap around, the reach around.
Yes, the reach around.
This was see you next Wednesday in reach around.
Yes.
I liked it a lot. I don't know how much it was new aside from the apocalypse shit. I think some of the Martian Manhunter stuff at the end may have been repurposed from an aborted Green Lantern cameo that may or may not have happened. Because if you notice in footage, Ben Affleck doesn't exactly say anything to Martian Manhunter about him being Martian Manhunter.
I thought that scene was kind of weird. It was sort of a strange note to end on, and part of it was because Ben Affleck did not seem to be reacting to anything.
I think that was originally him meeting a Green Lantern. But Green Lantern, as we know, does not bode well for commerce, because it has the name Green in it.
Yes.
Changed to Martian Manhunter, who was the secret seventh member of the Justice League, and in many ways the most important, because he is, for better or worse, the Black Superman that the Brothers Warner are looking for.
Yeah. I think you're right.
You want Black Superman? You know, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have that by making more Justice League movies.
That may be the solution they're looking for. John, what did you think of the epilogue?
It was interesting, the whole Batman, what turns out to be a dream sequence with the Jared Leto Joker, I thought was fascinating. And I said it's too bad DC films, because the Snyderverse got cut off so quick, that they didn't get to explore the idea of alternate Earths before Marvel exploits the hell out of it with the Spider-Verse live action movie, I think, that's coming out at the end of the year. Because it was DC that started the whole alternate timelines and everything for the comic book industry back in, God, didn't they invent Earth 2 and Earth 3 in the 50s or something like that?
Mm-hmm. What I liked about the Joker stuff was that we had that surreal sequence in Batman versus Superman, where Batman sees the future where Superman rules, and it's this hell on Earth, and that's kind of the impetus for him trying to kill Superman. And in this film, we see that that future is still something he sees; it hasn't changed. And to me, it made me go like, "Oh, I just, you know, it did the thing where I go, oh, come on, give me more." I want some more. I was very excited to see where they go with this. And it actually made me want to see more of Jared Leto's Joker. You know, the Suicide Squad film didn't make much of an impact on me. I didn't hate his Joker. I just didn't. The film just didn't do anything for me. And this made me go, okay, I like Jared Leto's Joker now. Let's see more, you know. So
I think it was a carrot on a stick to view to Warner Brothers and viewers, like, hey, absolutely, you can get more of this. You could get totally more of this if you, give Zack Snyder another.
And it worked for me.
I'd watch. I'm not saying it has to be made, but I'd watch if it was made.
Well, for better or worse, the only people who can really make a green screen movie are James Cameron, George Lucas, Robert Rodriguez, and Zack Snyder. And Zack Snyder and George Lucas are really the only ones who can visually make it work all the time. As in, each sequence and each movement leads up to the next thing. Yes. Other people can't. That's why I think he could make that, why he made that one animated Happy Feet Owl piece of shit movie.
Yeah. Happy Feet Owl.
My nose up at it because it's for children.
Yeah, and actually, it's my only complaint about this film is my same complaint with the director's cut of Batman versus Superman, is the use of R-rated profanity in these superhero movies. I don't think it's kind of like a little weird.
It does. It's not needed. It doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, it's gratuitous.
But you know, it is what it is.
It's okay. My son doesn't have the patience to sit through this damn thing.
When he goes, he's like, "And I will fucking kill you." My wife goes, "Wait, what?"
Well, that gave us the best low res meme in a while, where he says, "I'm gonna fucking kill you, Jared Leto."
It's a great exchange. really like, thank you for being my friend. And it's like,
all right, guys. So, Zali, guests go first. What do you give the Snyder Cut out of 10?
I give it a 9 out of 10 because when Zack Snyder was reshooting things like Jared Leto in the future, he could have added Kevin Dillon and had Kevin Dillon say it's Aquaman at some point. Mm. And he did. And had he added Kevin Dillon and made an Aquaman joke or Aquaman reference, it would have been an 11 out of 10. Or a 9 out of 11. A 9 out of 11. Which is pretty good. But I think that Kevin Dillon, it would have been religiously over the top and as good as the long version of Aliens.
Yes. John, what about you?
Give it like a 7.5. It's I'd say it's probably the most interesting like DC movie product in probably in a long, long time. Maybe since the Tim Burton Batman movies. The best, I don't know. I don't love any of this stuff, but this is definitely a strong contender, and I think it's worth watching at least once. I think even if you saw the Whedon cut and you liked it or hated it or whatever, even if you hate Zack Snyder movies, I think you should probably at least give this one viewing.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up with that, and I'd say, Zali, I'm with you. It's a 9 out of 10 for me. The reason I rate it so highly is that it feels like cultural healing to me. Like Walter said,
it's healing.
I feel like this is a cold drink of water in a desert of garbage, you know.
Yeah, and I understand where you guys are coming from, and I totally get it. It's just, you know, me, I'm in my own world where I'm basically watching everything made before 1980.
Yeah.
I'm kind of coming into the present to watch this, you know, so it's kind of like the flashpoint or something where I'm coming into the future to watch current product and to see what they got the Bugmen going nuts about. And, you know, and it's definitely got its value and it's weighty and it's heavy, but it's a hard movie to digest when I've avoided this stuff. I haven't even seen the last couple of Marvel productions. I haven't seen
Endgame.
Final Game or whatever the hell they're called. I haven't watched them. And
I saw Infinity War, but I have not seen Endgame.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen Infinity War. I haven't seen, I think there's several of them I haven't seen. I've forgotten what they put out.
Yeah.
I think the last one I watched was the Spider-Verse cartoon with my son, because it was, you know, a dad and son trip to the movies, and which I thought was fun. You know, it's no big deal. But this is something he's obviously going. It's something very new. He's going for that kind of Coppola heaviness, like on an Apocalypse Now, Godfather 2 level in a way. And it's interesting to see if anything, this is probably where things are going.
Yeah,
it's the future. Yeah.
Yeah, it totally is. It's like I could see this, and my opinion of this may improve if I decide to sit through it again.
I honestly, John, every time I watch Batman versus Superman, it gets better.
Yeah,
and I think it might be my favorite Batman movie.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
At
interesting.
This point,
I wouldn't even consider.
Because it is a Batman movie.
Yes.
And this film. You know, when I saw Justice League, like you, Zali, I saw all the potential in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still disappointed. But with this one, I see the realized potential, and just with it compared to the Marvel product, I'm so excited to see what this causes in the culture. And I think like Walter said, this coming out is going to heal the culture, and I think that's happening. I think he was right.
Oh, what one? I do have to make one extra thing we have not talked about.
Oh,
and this is going to make us popular with some people. But Walter mentioned on Twitter, and he's totally right. Is Amber Heard comes off great in this?
She does. Yeah.
Which surprised the hell out of me.
She's fantastic. Yeah.
There's a whole like culture and industry of people who make videos about how bad Amber Heard is and how great Johnny Depp is and how he's been so mistreated and how she runs fraudulent charities and is just very bad. She's just been so bad to Johnny. And it's hard for people.
Yeah, it's kind of tough. We have to separate the art from the artist.
Yeah.
And you have to do it consistently, and Amber Heard may not be a very nice person in real life. I doubt she is, but her work here is good.
And I liked Aquaman. It reminded me of a 90s superhero action movie, which is why
That was okay. It was fun. It was fun, disposable. I'll never watch it again.
Yeah. Amber Heard is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think. I mean, she might not be, but I'm not officially against her. The official anti-Amber Heard stance of the YouTube people is that's saying no to life.
I agree.
Well, anyway, thank you for having me on.
Yes, Zali, always a pleasure. So much fun. Well. Anyways, happy Snyder Cut, everybody. Go watch it if you haven't. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
Yeah, peace out.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.